Amateur Traveler, episode 835. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about mosques, museums, and a monastery, palaces and a pagoda, bazaar and the Black Sea, as we go to Istanbul and the Black Sea coast of Turkey. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. Let's talk about Turkey. I would like to welcome to the show Kimberly from theartoflivinginturkey.com, who strangely enough has come to talk to us about Turkey. Kimberly, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
I almost wanted to say, who's come to talk to us about Sheboygan, because it's late as I'm recording this, and I'm going to give you a little punchy, I'm afraid. Awesome. Kimberly, what is your relationship with
I moved here. It's been just about 3.5 years, actually. I had always wanted to live somewhere in Asia, and I had a friend move here and fell in love with Turkey, and so came for a visit and then moved the following year and have been loving it. Obviously, COVID has made things interesting for that first part, but now things are open again, and I'm excited to keep exploring and living here.
Now, you currently are in Istanbul.
Yes, I live in it. Yeah, I've lived in Istanbul the whole time.
Are you in the Asia part of Istanbul?
Yes, of course. Okay. Yes, I know. I had to live in Asia.
That's what I wondered. Much of Istanbul not being in Asia, I had to ask the question.
Right.
Terrific. And why should someone come to Turkey?
There's so many different reasons somebody should come to Turkey. I would say the big thing is the crazy amounts of history that people see. It still blows my mind. We were talking a little bit before, even about how I learn new things every day. I remember recently going to visit some friends who have a business over in İznik. I'm a graphic designer, so I'll help with some things. And I didn't realize that that was Nicaea from ancient times, because there's so many cities have changed their names. And so It's every time I turn around, I'm surprised by something new. And so it's really, really fun. That is a big thing. Oh, go ahead.
It's also where the İznik tiles are coming from.
Yes.
That were so prominent in the Turkish architecture, the blue tile work.
Yeah. Yeah. That my friends live really close to the, what do you call them? Sometimes I forget English words now that I've learned Turkish. They call it a vakıf, but a foundation who does the tiles. They live really close to it. So you can like walk by and see them working outside with the tiles. It's really interesting. Yeah.
But yeah, so that's like,
I think that's a big one, but also like the food is amazing. The people are so incredibly kind and hospitable. I really love meeting new people and hearing stories and engaging with them. So it's really cool to see a different culture. I love the variety in Turkey. So of course there's such history, but then they also have incredible beaches and incredible mountains. They have like it all. So depending on what you want, you can find it in Turkey most likely. So I think that's really fun for somebody coming to visit. You can tailor what do you actually want to see and go see that.
I gave you an impossible assignment, which you have pointed out to me, of if you had a week to spend in Turkey, how would you spend it? But you're up for the challenge, I assume.
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, 1 week, that does feel quite impossible. But I think being able to identify the things that you really like and really value. So I have 3 different options, and I'll just tell you the highlights of the cities. And if people want to see the 3 options laid out, they can go to the blog post and get more information. But I think the big thing is being able to really know what it is you want to do. Sure. Because obviously, like I was saying, there's such a variety in Turkey. So the big ones I wanted to touch on were either going out to the Black Sea, which is a whole different region in and of itself, a whole different culture. They have such a strong accent. It's so interesting. I got to go out there November of 2021, and it was fascinating. I went with a Turkish friend. And so it was so fun even seeing it through her eyes, because she hadn't been out there yet. So it was really interesting. But then also going down to Antalya, Pamukkale, you can go to Izmir. So there's lots of places and they all have a different feel. So I'd say, obviously, a week trip you're going to do in Turkey, Istanbul is going to be the stopping ground. There's 3 main areas of Istanbul that people will go to. One is the Sultanahmet area, which is like the Hagia Sophia, the Blue Mosque, these main old UNESCO sites. Then you have what they call like the newer district, the new business district, like where Taksim We have Galata Tower over there. You have lots of like really
cool... And new being 1800s.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the new mosque in over in Eminönü was built in like the 1500s or something. So right. New is relative.
Yeah, it's new.
New to ancient Constantinople. Yeah. Then you have some like really great like shops over on this new, quote new, area. And then there's Kadıköy and...
Go ahead. And I'm gonna slow you down because we're gonna do this at a speed that's gonna be helpful for people planning things. Let's do this. Let's go back to Sultanahmet. First of all, okay. You mentioned that as being the that's really the must see place. Everybody's gonna get to Sultanahmet. Mm-hmm. Who's going to Istanbul? And then you mentioned a couple places. You mentioned Hagia Sophia and the Sultanahmet Mosque or the Blue Mosque. Tell us more. Hagia Sophia.
Okay. I was thinking you wanted me to not spend as much time on Istanbul. It's the only reason. I can spend a little more time.
Oh, let's spend a little more time.
Okay. Sounds good.
I love Istanbul. It's one of, if not my favorite city in the world.
So. Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Okay, so yeah, in Sultanahmet, you have the Grand Bazaar is one of the most well-known places. It was made in like the 15th century. Mm-hmm. So they're still doing work or they're redoing work. I feel like they're always doing some work on it. But currently they're doing a lot of repairs. And so like they're redoing the ceiling, recreating it to what it looks like before, just because it's damaged over the years. It's incredible to see. I definitely would not recommend buying stuff there.
I'm going to be offered a Turkish carpet. And wouldn't I like to buy a Turkish carpet?
Oh my goodness. You're going to be offered English. All the things. And they'll all be really expensive. Which if that's like something on your bucket list, obviously then do it. But definitely, if you go outside of the Grand Bazaar into where all the locals shop, you'll find a much better price.
Okay.
I mean, it's crazy. You'll find... So, like, I took some friends in there last year, and they were looking at lamps inside. It was, like, 150 tele. You go outside, and they're 74. So, okay. It can be pretty big of a difference. Obviously, when you convert the dollars, it may seem minimal. I live in Turkish lira, so to me, I'm like, why would you pay the full price?
Right.
So there's that. There's also, like I said, the Hagia Sophia, which is, it was actually originally a church and it's the oldest one. And it was later turned into a mosque and then a museum. And now it's a mosque again. So there's been lots of history.
Just recently.
Yeah, just recently. Since I've been in Turkey, actually. There was lots of conversation about that one. even Turks were really upset about it because it's such a cultural piece, a UNESCO site. So for them to change that was a big deal.
And when you say change it, am I going to notice the difference when I go inside, besides the fact that now there's going to be people praying there? They did not re-plaster over the Byzantine mosaics, for instance.
Some of them are covered.
Okay.
You can't see everything and you can't go up to the second floor anymore.
Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah. You can only go on the ground floor, unfortunately. So it has changed.
Okay.
They just didn't really want there to be people up there. So you can see a lot still. It's still incredible to see, but it's definitely changed.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you have the Blue Mosque. You have the Süleymaniye Mosque. There's tons of mosques, obviously. And in my opinion, once you've seen one, if you have time, you can see them all. But you don't need to see them all. They're all different and, of course, beautiful. But there's so many things to see. I would say,
if you were going to see one mosque, which one would you see?
So if you really want a good view, the Süleymaniye Mosque has an epic view. The Blue Mosque is really unique because of, like we were talking about, at Iznik, the blue tiles. So there's a lot of really beautiful tile work in the Blue Mosque. So it depends on what you really want to see. But also, again, the Hagia Sophia has been converted into a mosque. And so there is some of the same feel.
Okay.
So, I mean, you could just go to the Hagia Sophia and call it good. But if you wanted to, I'd choose between really great view. You could go to the Süleymaniye Mosque and then go to a restaurant because it's a little bit more up on a hill. You'll have a better view of the Bosphorus and all around. So you'd be able to have a nice view while you ate if that was something you really wanted.
And my recollection is the Hagia Sophia was the largest church in the world for... Mm-hmm. 1,000 years.
Yeah,
I want to say it was the largest building in the world for about that long. Yeah, until the completion of the Seville Cathedral in 1520. So from the 400s to 1520 Hagia Sophia was it. It was.
I didn't know that part.
The pinnacle of architecture.
Yeah, it was huge.
You can definitely see around the world in places where the Ottomans ruled, where the influence of that architectural design influenced, obviously, the Blue Mosque, as you said. It looks like it was built by the same architect, but obviously not. It was built 1,000 years later, but it definitely influenced that style of architecture within the Ottoman Empire for a long time. If you go to the Muhammad Ali Mosque in Cairo, for instance, you can see the influence of the Hagia Sophia Mosque. Hagia Sophia Church, sorry. At that time.
Yeah, it is interesting. I just got back from a trip from over in Thailand, Southeast Asia, and the mosques there look so incredibly different. And it was really interesting to me to see the big difference between them, how different shapes, colors, just everything was so different. And so there is definitely a look to the Ottoman mosques, this Ottoman era, which is really fascinating.
Excellent. Anything else we want to talk about in
Sultanahmet?
Sultanahmet, sorry.
No, you're good. I would recommend the Topkapi Palace. So it is this ancient palace, and I actually haven't been able to get to it. It was closed during COVID, and then when my mom was here, we went up, and it was closed for renovations. I'm hoping to go next week, actually, and so I'm really excited about this.
I quite enjoyed it. You'll enjoy it.
Yes.
It is nothing like any Western palace you've seen. It is a very Oriental style palace. And I don't mean Orient like China, but Orient like the East, where rooms, for instance, wouldn't have a lot of furniture. They'd have a lot of carpets.
Uh-huh.
And it has a harem, which is not something you generally find in a Western style palace. So very different, for instance, from the more modern palace, the one whose name I've just completely forgotten that was built in the 1800s.
Are you talking about the Dolmabahce Palace?
Dolmabahce Palace, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Very different from the Dolmabahce Palace.
Yeah, I was going to even mention that. It is interesting. So if you do both, you don't have to do both of them. I've done the Dolmabahce, and that one's over on the newer side, over in Beşiktaş area. And it's really incredible. So I'm excited to go to Topkapı and compare the two.
It will be less ornate, even though it was built at a time of higher power for the Ottomans, or the Seljuk Turks, actually, really, at the time. But it is a much more simple style, much more from a people who are coming from being nomadic people. So very different. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what's interesting and fascinating to me about Istanbul, Turkey, is that there's similar things, but simultaneously, they're so incredibly different. The people are the same everywhere, but also they're so different. The food is the same. They have the same dishes, and then they're so different. So it's really fun to me.
And quickly to hit your other areas before we head out of Istanbul, you also took us over to the Beylu area and Taksim.
Yeah, there's places like Taksim, which I'm like, meh, there's not much to see there, in my opinion. People love it. I'm like, okay.
Big public square, hotels, some restaurants. Yeah.
Okay, that doesn't sound super. I feel like I don't want to spend my time there. But there's like the Galata Tower, which really does have an incredible view of the city, especially at sunset. That's my favorite time to go. You get this really beautiful pink golden color that kind of tints everything. There, if you like parks, there's Yıldız Park and Maçka Demokrat Park, which are really great to walk around in.
Okay.
Yıldız Park is up on a hill, so it has a good view. You can just go and get a Turkish coffee and hang out for a couple of hours.
Okay.
And then obviously the Dolmabahçe Palace are big areas over there. And then if people are into museums, I'd recommend the Archaeological Museum. And that's over in Sultanahmet, but that's one of the few museums that I'm like, yeah. But yeah, the Galata Tower is similar time as the Grand Bazaar, that 15th century. So again, it's a really old building. It was really important in that time. And they've redone it. It's really incredible inside. They've got a really cool 3D. I don't know if this was there when you were there, but they have like this 3D interactive kind of model of the city. And so you see boats trucking along. It's really fun. So definitely worth checking out.
And I know you want to move us on. So any other things we absolutely have to cover? Otherwise, we do have a episode on Istanbul. We can send people off to that.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Just covered Istanbul.
I'd say one thing is, if you have an extra day in Istanbul, I highly recommend Kadıköy. It's where I live, But it's also such a great city, and it's on the Asian side. In Kadikoi, you can find amazing food. So it feels like the westernish kind of side, or the western part city of the Asian side.
Okay.
So you'll find more modern stuff. You'll find things. Sometimes I see things that I'm like, oh, I wouldn't have even seen that back in Oklahoma where I lived before. But you have really eclectic art. You have really beautiful handmade jewelry, bags, leather bags. Some really great stuff, but really fun just to walk around. And then there's a really pretty seaside called the Sahil over in Moda. And so just walking around in there, you'll be able to really have an enjoyable time. If you like walking through like neighborhoods and seeing what normal life is like somewhere else, I highly recommend that area for that.
All right. And then as we leave Istanbul, where are we off to?
So this is the hard part.
Yes, I'm going to make you choose.
I think today we'll go to the Black Sea.
Okay.
Because it was such an enjoyable time. And it's different. I think most people know about Antalya and Izmir, like these beach cities. Everybody knows, I feel like. But Trabzon, all in that area, I feel like is much less known. So I think I'd like to spend the time there. So okay. Trabzon is definitely just an hour and a half flight away. It's really easy to get to. Now, we didn't talk about this, but in Istanbul, you don't really have to rent a car. I'd actually advise against it.
Yeah.
It'll make you want to kill people if you rent a car. So I would say public transportation is amazing, which in my blog post, I give more information for somebody who needs that. But you don't need to rent a car in Istanbul, but I would definitely rent a car in Trabzon. Because it's really spread out and it's not congested like Istanbul is. So it's not as unenjoyable to drive there. It'd be more like you're driving in a big city.
When we rented a car and my former Turkish exchange student was driving down in like Izmir and Hierapolis and Pamukkale and those sort of places, I think I was glad that he was driving when we would come up to a light and they would form as many lanes as could physically fit.
Yes, when I first saw that, I was like, what is happening?
Some challenges to driving in Turkey. The lanes are
suggestions.
Yeah.
Yes, it is crazy. If you can come up with a good excuse for why you're doing whatever you're doing, you can probably get away with it. It's fascinating. So obviously that's more important when you're in a really crowded city. But further out, and you get a feel for it. Once you're driving for a little bit, you're like, okay, I understand what's happening here. But yeah, they will queue up as many people so they can get through. And it can be crazy. It can be really stressful for sure.
So you're taking us over to Trabzon, which is like 3/4 of the way over towards the Georgia border.
Yeah, it's really close.
Okay.
And it's just a really beautiful city. I want to say, I can't remember what number it was of biggest cities in Turkey, but it's one of the bigger cities. It's not like Izmir, Antalya big. So the country is, I think, 80 million-ish people, right. And there's roughly 20 million in Istanbul. So a quarter of the population is in Istanbul, which is why it's so chaotic. Simultaneously, a lot of foreigners will gravitate to certain towns. Trabzon is not one of them. So you're not going to run into a ton of tourist, it's not going to be like that weird touristy feel, which I personally love. But you also get to see something really unique of Turkey. I have 3 or 4 days in Trabzon alone just because of the location and day trips from Trabzon. The first one I would say is you could just wander around downtown. They have lots of little places to see. They have a little Hagia Sophia there, which is really cool. And that one is actually really fascinating because half of it has been converted to a mosque and half of it is still a museum. So you get to walk in and see these amazing frescoes on the walls that have such vibrant color. They've really stood the test of time well. So it's really beautiful to see. Obviously, you can't go on the other side if they're doing prayer or something. You might be able to pop in if there's not.
My guess would be that they were covered with plaster from 1400s until the early 1900s during the time period of Ataturk, which is probably one of the reasons why they look so fresh.
Yeah, it could be. It very well could be. Even when we went through Cappadocia, there's a lot of vandalism. It was really interesting that they would scratch out the eyes. And so I don't know why they did that, but it was the common vandalism. So even if the artwork was still pristine. You'd see these eyes scratched out on different sites. Yeah, it's so weird. But doing downtown is great. There, I would say go to a car park and take a bus in, a shuttle in, walk in. You don't want to try driving in downtown Trabzon. It's a little crazy. I quit from driving there. It was too much for me. But it's really cool. So we did that. We had like a breakfast. There's this place called the Green Corner Cafe and Restaurant. And so it sat up on the hill. We had a Turkish breakfast and had this epic view of the water. And it was just green. So there was nothing in front of us. And the breakfast was absolutely delicious. You got to be careful for the bees here. The bees really love not only the honey, but also the lunch meat. And so if you keep it too close to you, you may see some bees coming. But it's a really beautiful space. There's also the Trabzon Castle, which is cool to go see. Again, just those ancient... And obviously, I'm American, so we don't have anything older than a couple hundred years, really. So it's so fascinating to me to see these pieces of history that have been standing for centuries. It's so incredible to me. So the Trabzon Castle is a really cool space. And then if you're into churches, there's a couple of churches. St. Anne Church is the main well-known one that you can see. It's well taken care of. And it's interesting because most churches have been converted into mosques. And this is one of the few that haven't. And so it's really cool to me to see things as they were originally made, whether it's a mosque or church or a temple, like what was it intended to be? And being able to see it in that is really enjoyable.
Okay.
And then also the last thing is Ataturk's pavilion. So this was a home that was given to him and he lived in it towards the end of his life. I want to say he passed away there.
He died in Dolmabahçe Palace.
Okay. It's a way he didn't.
They still have the bed there with the big Turkish flag on it.
Oh, wow.
It's okay. The room that he died in.
Wow. Okay. So he was there then just before he died. It was like given to him. And when he died, it was given back to the city or whatever. His family gave it back to the city eventually. And it's become a museum.
And for those who aren't familiar, so Ataturk would be coming out of World War One is the founder of the modern Turkish nation, and especially up until the last 3 years or so, the secular nation, where there was a separation of church and state. So he is the one, for instance, who decided that they would move to the Latin alphabet. He is the one who had just a huge impact on them as a Turkish people separate from Ottoman. So even though the Ottoman Empire was centered in Turkey, he led a revolt against the empire, as it were, and against also those who wanted to come in and colonize Turkey, French and such after World War One. But I'm not sure if I can quite remember his full name, but it's something like Gazi Mustafa Kemal Pasha. But he gets the nickname Ataturk, father of the Turkish people.
Yes. Yeah. It literally means father. Yeah. And it's interesting because they love him to this day. Like he is, I was trying to think, we don't have anybody like that. Maybe Abraham Lincoln in America.
More like Washington.
Washington, okay.
Yeah, it's more like the founder.
But I mean, we don't have the same love for a person in America the way they do.
It's newer, for one thing, maybe.
Yeah, this is true. 100 years old. Ah, this year it'll be 100. Ooh, I'm so excited to be here. 100 years this year, and so it'll be a really big deal. But yeah, you'll see his signature everywhere throughout Turkey. Every school classroom has to have his photo in it. Like, Ataturk is a really big deal. So it's very interesting. So you can see where he lived and how he lived. It's interesting. I love houses and buildings, and so I really enjoyed it. So that's day one, Trabzon area. So for another day, that day is going hiking into the Altın Dere Valley National Park.
Okay.
And that's where you would see the Sümela Monastery. You can hike around. So like this national park is pretty big. It's in the mountains. Really beautiful. We drove up in there and we went during fall. So we just got to see the beautiful fall colors. It was really, really gorgeous. So the Sümela Monastery is really incredible. I would recommend you call beforehand to see if they're actually open.
Okay.
They are always closing it down for renovations. I have a photo on my blog that you can see, like it's tucked up into the rock and they built this monastery into the side of this cliff.
Right.
And so it's in a slightly precarious location.
Yes.
So they're always trying to improve it for safety, especially with so many people wanting to see it and come in. They worked on it for years and finished it, opened it up. My friends went. And so we were like, okay, great. It's open again. Let's go. We got there and it was closed. And like, oh, it's going to open in February. This was November. And we're like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. They opened it and then saw something else that really needed to be done or something. So they had to close it again. I don't know. So all that to say, it's always changing. I would just recommend calling beforehand. But even if you can't get into it, it's a really cool space. You can go up to the side of it. So once you see the photo, you'll understand a little bit better. But when you go up, you'll take a little mini bus. They'll drive you up to the top of this area.
Okay.
There's like some bathrooms. There's a really ancient church. There's a little area where you can see the side of it and you just wouldn't be able to enter if it's closed. But you could still get up close to it. And so it's definitely worth seeing. Absolutely incredible space. There's so much debate over who made it. Like the history of it's really confusing.
Really?
Yeah. They say, okay, these people built it. But then other people would say, no, we don't actually know that. There's no history from what I've understood.
Hmm.
Do you know something different? You seem to know a lot of...
Not about so, this is all completely new to me tonight.
Yeah.
No, I know whatever Wikipedia tells me. And yeah. So that's what...
Wikipedia is the best. They do say, I can't remember now who it is. I'm not great with history, so I don't remember all those facts. But there has been some contention of who actually built it and when it was actually built. And so it's really just like in that, I find that intriguing, the mystery of this space. But it's absolutely incredible. Multiple level stories in this building on the side of a cliff. Wow.
The only thing I saw is the Turkish Ministry of Culture and Tourism places the date around 386 AD, which if it's in that century, means that the oldest part of it, and the part you're seeing on the cliff is obviously not the oldest part. It's much more recent than right. that, but would be some of the first church buildings. The first church buildings in Christianity weren't yeah. built really until the 300s. And so
right.
it's pretty early. It's pretty old.
Yeah, it's so old. Ways of building and stuff have changed a lot in the last sure. 2000 years. Yeah, they're just always trying to make it safer to actually let people go in. Definitely should go see the Sümela Monastery. But then also one of the things that Trabzon's known for is the Uzungul, which literally translates to long lake. And so it's like this big lake. And if you don't go there, all the Turks will say, why didn't you go to Uzungul? I didn't go. It wasn't on my top need to sees, but that's definitely what the Turks are asking you. And
from a picture, it looks like Switzerland.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, you talked about the variety in Turkey. This would categorize as variety.
Yes, it's so crazy to me.
Yeah.
We just didn't have, we ran out of time. Yeah. There's not time, like I said, there's not time to see it all. But it is beautiful, and all the Turks really love it. So if you're with Turks, they'll be like, let's go to Uzungul. And then you'll know why. And then my last thing for this day was, so I'm a huge fan of rice pudding, which is sütlaç in Turkish.
Okay.
And never really was growing up. But I think my roommate in college introduced me to Cozy Shack, that like crappy, whatever, cheap rice pudding. And I was like, oh, this is good. But then I got to Turkey and ate rice pudding and have fallen in love with it. And so... they do rice pudding really well here, but in okay. Hamsiköy, which is like on the way down from this mountain that you're in, on the way down, Hamsiköy is like where it really started in Turkey. And what's different, like obviously you can get sütlaç anywhere in Turkey, but in Hamsiköy and Trabzon. So if you're like, oh, we're not going to do this day, but we really want to try sütlaç, you could get it in Trabzon as well. It'll be similar flavor, but the cows just have such a bigger variety of foods they can eat. And so the milk that comes from them is really, really rich. So when we had sütlaç in Hamsiköy, it almost tasted like this rice pudding was made with cream instead of milk. And okay. the flavor just was like an explosion in your mouth. I still dream of this sütlaç.
All right then.
So it's definitely worth trying if you like that type of dessert, a milky dessert. It was absolutely incredible. We loved it so much that we got a second one to take with us for the next day of our road trip. So you can go up into the Hamsiko area, and there's multiple little restaurants there that you can get it. It's great. So get it with some tea and just enjoy the scenery. Nice end to your day as you head back into town. So that's day two in Trabzon. Day three, I recommend taking a day trip over to Rize. So okay. Rize, you go even further towards the borders, and there's lots of really cool tea plantations there. So if you're a tea person, you'll probably really love this place. You can walk through the different plantations and pick the actual leaves. You can do tours. You can do all kinds of stuff with these tea fields and plantations. It's really cool. There's lots of rivers. So the big one is called the Fırtına Deresi. Fırtına means storm. And so it's just this really beautiful, rough water river that runs alongside. There'll just be all of these restaurants that line this river that you can sit and eat and have this beautiful view. My parents love to get their pop-up camper and drive somewhere and go see the national parks. And so there's places in Washington where they live where we'll see rivers like this that are just really pretty. But it's so fun to see it in Turkey, especially living in Istanbul. I'm like, wow, I would have never seen this.
This defies my mental image of Turkey.
Yeah, it's so crazy. It's so different, which is why I love this area. And it's so funny because a lot of Turks even haven't been up to the Black Sea. Like my friend that I went with, she's 37, I think, and she still had never been. So it's really interesting how different it is. So there's this river you can sit and have lunch at and enjoy the scenery, enjoy the food. There's lots of different options. Obviously, the food in Trabzon is going to be the same as throughout Turkey, except for there's different flares to it, different spices or a different way of cooking it. So like, one of my favorite things to do is have köfte everywhere I go, which köfte is just like their Turkish meatball. Yeah, I just love trying the different flavors from the different regions because they're different. So in Trabzon, one of the things you can have is the akçabat köfte. And it's just a softer meatball. It's, I don't know what the different spices they use, but they definitely taste different than ones you'll find in Istanbul. Or, yeah, it's so fun to just try the different flavors of the same thing. Oh, I think that's fascinating. And then there's lots of little villages in Rize. So the Aydar village is really popular among tourists, like a typical mountain village, like nothing super special about it, but it's just like super cute and quaint homes with lots of shops and restaurants. And obviously you get to see a whole different side of Turkish culture than you would anywhere else because they're so set apart. And it is interesting to see how Turks live out in these smaller villages as opposed to in the city. It's like you're stepping into in a completely different world. Did you get to go to any of those places outside of Istanbul where it was like smaller village, or was it mostly big cities?
Yeah, mostly I was in cities.
Yeah. Yeah. If you ever get to come back, I highly recommend going out to a village somewhere. It's so fascinating. Obviously, they've been doing it for a long time, so it's working for them, but it's so different. There's also like waterfalls. There's a really beautiful botanical garden. And so there's lots to see, and it's going to be a lot more outdoorsy of the feel in Rize. So drive over. It's like an hour and a half drive. It's not very far from Trabzon, so it's easily doable in a day. And then just enjoy. And then the last day, I recommended a drive down the Trabzon coast to the west. So we drove from Trabzon to Sinop, which is too long for this, but we were driving back to Istanbul. But driving down the coast, there are so many little small towns that you can stop in. And again, if you're wanting to see culture, which is usually what I love to do. I love to see how people live and see the buildings and try the foods. And I'm not as much into the go to all of the ancient tourist places. And so this gives
you
and
I should
really
not travel together then.
I love to see them. It's just not where I spend the bulk of my time.
I understand.
I've definitely been to the Hagia Sophia and all those things for sure. Yeah. But it's really cool to see all these different places. And so, and that's why I like a road trip, because you can see so much.
And you mentioned Sinop, and let's say we had a little more time. And there you go. Why should someone take the time to go there?
Sinop is great. It's really small. It's like this little peninsula that juts off the mainland. We went to a couple museums actually there, which again, I said, I'm not a huge museum person, but we went to, I could look it up. I don't remember the name of it because I didn't prepare that, but we went to a great museum and there was like these amazing, back in the Bible times, they talk about the water being in those jar vases.
Sure.
And they're massive. I'm 5'8" and they were easily over my head. So 6 feet tall, like huge. And so it was really cool to see these jars for water or whatever they put in them that have lasted centuries. There was some really cool artifacts there. So there's that. So one of the things we've talked about food and it being different in different places, one of those is manta. Manta is essentially the Turkish ravioli. And they're really small, maybe the size of a quarter, and they're handmade. And they usually put meat in them, but you can find vegetarian ones where they put lentils or potatoes. But everywhere does it different. And the typical manta is these raviolis with some yogurt on top. And well, yogurt in Turkey is different than in America.
But yogurt is everywhere in Turkey.
Everywhere. They eat yogurt with
yogurt
everything.
Yogurt for breakfast, yogurt for lunch, yes. Yogurt for dinner.
And it's usually savory. They don't do sweet yogurt. So interesting. When I first tried it, I was like, wow, this is sour. It's so much more sour than it is in America.
And then, of course, you're having a yogurt drink with it, too.
Oh, Aydan. Yes. Yes. Yeah, yogurt is definitely beloved by the Turks. So they'll put yogurt on top of it and then like a chili sauce. Okay. The chili oil, actually, not sauce. It's a chili oil. Mm-hmm. And so that's like how you typically would eat manta. But then if you go over to Kayseri, which is in Cappadocia, it's more like a soup. And Sinop is my favorite manta. And I don't eat a ton of pasta, so maybe a pasta lover would love all of it. But in Sinop, they just do some butter and walnuts. And the flavor was really good. every time I think of Sinop, I think of Sinop manta. And it was absolutely delicious. There's really beautiful. We just drove around the peninsula and it was a really incredible view. One of my favorite parts of driving around Sinop was as you drive, they'll just be like cows or sheep with their shepherd with them. And you're just like, oh, let me get out of your way. And so it's really cool to see people doing life there. I think we stayed one night, maybe two. We also had some really great fish. So it's obviously coastal, great fresh fish. I highly recommend, it's called balık çorbası, which is essentially fish soup.
Okay.
I'd never had fish soup before, but it's definitely worth having. I'd never had it before Turkey, but it's definitely worth trying.
Just to put the distances we're talking about in perspective, I see that it's about a 6-hour drive from Trabzon to Sinop, and then you've driven about halfway back to Istanbul?
Yeah.
Roughly?
Yeah. Which is why we took that route. We're like, oh, we're driving back to Istanbul. Let's go stop in Sinop. And it went so great. It was perfect. But along the way, going to Sinop, you have Samsun and Ordu and Fatsa and all these little towns that are just so interesting. Ordu is really beloved by Turks. And we stopped in Samsun and had a coffee at this place called Makbeer. And it was really delicious. Western style. You could get Turkish coffee, but it's more of like a Western kind of place. So if you're like craving, but you don't want Starbucks because they're so much better than Starbucks. Makbeer was a really great, fun place. But there's just like lots of places to stop. You can go out onto the rocks, on the water. And that's one thing too about Turkey that is so interesting to me is that you'll often see people, like there'll be rocks where they've built out the coast of whatever city you're in. So they have these big rocks, you know how they do. And in America, you would never go out on them because I think it's illegal, maybe, but you wouldn't do it. It's not safe. In Turkey, people go out there and they sit on them and they have their picnic lunch on these rocks. And so they have the waves crashing in and it's just incredible. Definitely worth seeing, in my opinion, all along that coast. You'll see these cliffs and oh, it's just gorgeous.
Got it.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything else.
That was going to be my next question. This feels like we're kind of wrapping down here, which is okay. We've gone to the Black Sea. We've gone to Istanbul. We spent time here. Anything else people should know if they're going to do this trip in Turkey?
The Trabzon side, the Trabzon one that we're asking, right?
Yeah. If you're going to the Trabzon one, anything else that you need to know?
I'd say this one is one of the ones that you could easily do in the summer. It gets warm in the summer.
Yep.
It's going to be a lot drier in the summer there. You go into spring and fall. Winter everywhere is the wettest time of the year. Unless you're really into that, I don't recommend traveling to Turkey in the winter. You're probably just going to experience a lot of wet, cold. It's not nearly as fun. But spring and fall, you can get some rain. We went in November. I don't think we had any rain. It was great weather, but that's not always guaranteed. But the summer is going to be the least amount of rain. Obviously, it's also going to be the hottest, mm-hmm. also the most crowded. So it depends, again, what you're willing to endure. I'd rather go in a colder time where there's not as many people. So I usually travel spring and fall. But I'd say summer for beautiful weather is the time. And hot, it gets in the mid-80s. Maybe low 90s. So it's not like we're not talking like hundreds. Okay. If you are going into the middle of Turkey, it can easily get into 41, 42 okay. Celsius.
Over 100 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, it can get super hot inland. But up there, the coast, the water kind of tempers it. And I'd say make sure if you do rent a car, make sure that you rent a car that either is definitely manual and has some good cylinders with it, like that will be able to get you up these hills. So some of them are pretty steep. If you have a really dinky car, you might have a harder time and not feel as confident. I've done that down in Fethiye, and I was like, ooh, note to self, bigger car next time. They can just be really steep. The way they've cut the road sometimes are okay. A little intense.
It's funny. You are so far at this point from some of really all of the other sites that right. I know that people who go to Turkey go to, that it's almost easier to combine this trip with a trip to Georgia, the country, obviously,
yeah,
than
you
it
could.
Would be to combine it with a trip to Izmir or Efesus. Or,
right,
instance.
Yeah, I wouldn't combine it with those, yeah. Which is why they're separate. Yeah, it's just too hard. So different.
Very cool. Then we're going to get to some of our wrap-up questions.
Okay.
You are standing in the prettiest spot in Turkey, and let's skip Istanbul. We've covered Istanbul before. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the Black Sea area, the Trabzon. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
Oh, that's a good question. I have to think about that for a second. I think the view from the Sumela Monastery was pretty incredible. You could see, because you were so high up, you could see for so far. You could see the beautiful mountains, and the trees were gorgeous. Obviously, fall, they were changing colors. But then you have this building coming out of the side of the mountain in the mix of all of this right, beautiful, right. natural elements. It was really, really incredible. And would definitely say that's one of the top highlights.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh about Turkey.
I love the different ways. I guess in America we say like the different accents.
Sure.
So the different accents in Turkey. But one really simple one is in Turkish to say sıkıntı yok is like, oh, it's no problem. There's no, yeah, okay. Sıkıntı is problem. Yok is there is no. But in Trabzon, in the Black Sea coastline, they would say sikinti yok. And so it's really minor to somebody who doesn't speak Turkish. But that was like the running joke the whole week. Instead of saying sikinti, so it's like the versus an E sound. And hearing them say it, it's just different. So I think it was really fun to hear these, knowing Turkish now and hearing the difference of dialect was really, really fun for me.
Very cool. Yeah. And if you had to summarize, let's just pick on that region now in mm-hmm. just three words. What three words would you use?
I would say nature, culture,
okay.
and otherworldly.
Okay. I'll give you that as a hyphen there.
Yeah, yeah.
Our guest again has been Kimberly from theartoflivingintürkiye.com. And Kimberly, if we want to send people to your best post about this itinerary that you've talked about, where are we sending them to?
Yeah, it's going to be theartoflivingintürkiye.com, Turkey-itinerary.
Excellent. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes to make it easy for people to find you.
Yeah.
But hopefully people who want to learn more about Turkey will go to your blog and read more. So
awesome. Thanks so much, Chris.
Thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Turkey.
Thank you.
My thanks go out to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially, and especially to Catherine, who became the latest patron of the show this week. Thanks, Catherine, and thanks all the rest of you. It helps get the show out just not just monetarily, but also for the encouragement. I heard this week from Julie, who wrote about the podcast. I found your podcast about 3 years ago. Being the type of person I am, I had to start from the beginning. On the Apple Podcasts, the first episode is the one about Disneyland. I was immediately hooked. Between working, raising a teenager, getting married, and being a healthcare worker during the pandemic, I have managed to get to episode 523. This is with taking some breaks to listen to other podcasts, reading, watching TV, and just life in general. I love your varied guests and your calm yet witty demeanor. I have used your podcast when I'm going to certain destination, Savannah, Charleston, Indianapolis, to name a few, and I'm currently listening to everything about the UK and Ireland due to the fact that I have a trip booked in May. This will be my first hop over the Atlantic Ocean, as up to now, I've only been able to travel in North and Central America and in the Caribbean. I'm beyond excited and hope to do much, much more travel in the coming years. Julie, thanks so much for listening. I cringe a little bit when I hear people going back to the beginning and listening to the old episodes. I hope they held up okay, and bon voyage on your future travels. Julie also asked about joining the amateurtraveler.com/trips group. I should tell you that that group has voted on where the Amateur Traveler group trips will be in 2023, which is Japan, and 2024, which is Morocco. So join that group if you're interested in more information. amateurtraveler.com/trips. And I do have to ask, am I a little crazy that I let people vote on where I go on vacation? I think so. I also heard from Kirsten, who used to help me with Amateur Traveler, saying, I just returned from Scotland last week. And she responded to the episode we just did on Edinburgh. So much fun. After hiking Arthur's Seat, doing a tour at Holyrood Distillery is an entertaining and tasty way to spend an hour. Thanks, Kirsten, and lovely to hear from you again. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral.